Okay, we're about to begin a new sugya. So the background of our sugya is a little bit of a continuation of some of the things we were talking about in the past couple of shiurim about the significance of dibur, of kedushin. So we know for a fact that dibur is critical when it comes to kedushin, but we also know that the particular nusach of the dibur is not that critical. As long as you're getting the message across loud and clear, how loud and how clear it has to be. That was less sugya in terms of the yados. But in terms of the message, it's pretty clear that you try to be Mekadosh, that would be acceptable. And therefore, the Gemara quotes a Braisa and the first set of Marmakamos, a whole list of different Lashonos that are perfectly acceptable. So Tana Rabbanan, Hareat Ishti, Hareat Arusasi, Hareat Kenuyali. So either you're my wife, you're my Arusa, you're required to me, Mikudeshas. Those three are for sure okay. Hareat Shali, Hareat Bishusi, you are belonging to me, you are in my domain, or at Zukukali, you are connected to me, Mekudeshes. Those are all okay. Nobody questions the meaning of those words. The Gemara just questions the technical wording of the Braisa, Lesninu Kulu Kechada. Why doesn't the Braisa list them all off together? Why does the Braisa give three and say Mekudeshes, then another three and say Mekudeshes? The Gemara says that's a purely technical issue. Tlaslash Amirvagar Sinu. It happened to be that the Braisa, that the Tana, that Braisa had learned three of them in one unit. And then the next week he heard the next three, so he wanted to continue for wait him to keep everything organized in his head. So he listed off three together, then three separately, but don't draw any conclusions from this. But then the Gemara comes up with a whole bunch of strange Lashonos, which are not clear what the person really means. Ibailu, miuchedes limau. If he says to her, he gives her a ring and he says, you are singled out for me. Singled out to be my what? Singled out to be my wife? Singled out to work for me? Singled out, I don't know what singled out means. Mu'edis limau. So yud is also a strange lashon that sometimes has a lashon condition to it. Or ezrasi mahu. Does ezrasi mean you're my helpmate? Does ezrasi mean you're ezer kenegdi? Does it mean you're gonna clean my floors? Negdosi mahu. Negdosi, does that mean kenegdo like a wife? Does that mean kenegdo you're going to be fighting with me all the time? He says, atzurasi mahu, tzilosi mahu. You're my rib, skurasi mahu. You're under me, tfusasimau, you're grabbed by me. Not a lot of strange poetic lishonos, unclear. Lekuchasimau, what if he says, you're my lekucha, you are taken to me. So one of these lishonos, we know what the answer is. So the word lekuchasi does serve as a lashon kedusha, because that in fact is a reference to what it says in the Chumash, a lashon kikachishisha. Basically, what we can walk away with this gemara is that if the lashon is clear, even though it's not one of the magic lashons of kedusha and erusin, that would be acceptable. If the lashon is less clear, then we're going to have a question. It's with this background that the gemara raises the following question, which becomes the entire background for us.
All these other words are also good, you think?
Which other? No, the gemara says ma on all these. The gemara left them as a teiku. The only one that we were poshet is for sure good, besides the first six, was the Lukhasi. So now we begin asking, Yibailu, Charufasi Mahu. If a person says to a woman, gives her a ring, and he says, Hariat Charufasi. Now the word Charufasi is a very, very tricky lashon. It does appear in the Chumash in the context of quote-unquote marriage, but not really marriage. The only time that the word Charuf appears in the Torah, for our purposes, is V'hi Shivcha Necharefes La'ish. The Torah is describing a woman who is not quite married in the full sense of the word, but she is clearly designated to a man, and somebody else is mezana with her. And the Torah is clear to tell us that this is not Eishes Ish Mamish, so nobody's Chayav Misa. The reason why it's not full-fledged Eishes Ish is because she's not a full-fledged regular woman. She has some degree of still being a Shivcha. The Torah says, Lo Yumsu Ki Lo Chupasha. So neither the man or the woman who violated this quote-unquote Eishes Ish, neither of them are chayav misa, because kilochu bashi wasn't freed, so she's not a regular kedusha, not regular eshes ish. However, the Torah does say that something happens, he has to bring a korban, he needs a kapara, ashram shiv charufa. So clearly there was some kind of an aver, there was some kind of a quasi-marriage that the Torah did recognize, but it's very unclear what the status of this marriage is. So it's marriage that you're not allowed to be with somebody else. On the other hand, it's not marriage, it carries with it the regular rules of eshes ish zinsa. So the Gemara addresses the question, if a person uses this Lashon Charufa, so what does that mean for us? Tachlis, is that yes, a Lashon Kedushin, or is it not a Lashon Kedushin? So the Gemara begins to tackle that question. Charufasi Mal, Toshma, we learned the Braisa, the Sanya. Ha'omer Charufasi Mekudeshes. If a person says to a woman, Re'a Charufasi, the Kedushin would be valid. Shekein, Be'Yehuda, Korin La'arusa Charufa. The reason why it's acceptable is because in Eretz Yehuda, the southern part of Eretz Israel, so they used to use the word arusa, the word charufa, interchangeably. So since in the dictionary of the Anshe Yehuda, that was considered to be a lashon of arusa, a lashon of kedushin, that's okay, and therefore the woman is mekudeshes. So at least at this point, the Gemara is not making any reference to the shulchan charufa and the chumash. We're not bringing a raya from the Torah as to the meaning of the word. We're simply bringing a raya from the usage by the lashon b'nei adam. So at this stage, the Gemara thinks that the saying of charufa would be acceptable because, after all, it does mean a lashon arusa, at least in some places in the world.
But then we
have the quote. No, that's the next line.
Oh.
Okay, so the first line, the Brai says, "Om charufa sibukadash kemi lekar lusa charufa." So he asks the Gemara, "If Yehuda have Yeruba di alma, why in the world should what they're doing in Eretz Yehuda impact on anybody else?" Says Yehuda is the rove of the world. So the simple reading of the Gemara was the Gemara thought that since in Eretz Yehuda it is normal to use the word charufa for arusa, that makes it normal for the whole world. And therefore, I don't even live in Yehuda; I live in America. And I'm a Kaddish in Israel, Lashon Charufa. So the Braisa said, Mekodesh, yes. Shekein Yehuda, Karlosu Charufa, because since in Yehuda they call it that way, so whatever the minig of Yehuda is going to impact on the rest of the world. So the Gemara says, wow, that doesn't make any sense. How in the world, the pun intended, what they're doing in Eretz Yehuda, how does that impact on me? If Yehuda would be 90% of population, so then you follow the rove. But if Yehuda is just a small percentage of the world anyway, why should the way they talk in Yehuda have any effect outside of Eretz Yehuda, have any effect whatsoever? That's the Gemara's kasha. So the Gemara says, Yitaka, right? And the Gemara's going to have to revamp and reformulate the entire Braisa, reinterpret the entire Braisa. So one thing is crystal clear from Gemara, that when we're trying to determine what's considered to be the norm, what's considered to be the standards vis-a-vis the lashon of kedushin, you can't just pick on one location and say, well, if they do it in some places, that's okay, and that impacts on everybody else. So that's clear for the Gemara. So this issue that the Gemara just raised is no longer a kedushin issue. This is an issue of kol Torah kula, because there are many, many areas of halacha that depend on what are the standards, what does the olam consider to be normal. So how do you determine what's called the olam? Who calls the shots? Who determines what's considered to be within the realm of normalcy or not? Again, this has nothing to do with Kedushin per se. Kedushin is one of the many, many areas of halacha that are going to depend on this fundamental question. So the Rishonim take us on a tour through other areas of halacha, other sugyas in the Gemara, where also the issue of normalcy and determining what's considered to be normal standards comes up, and the Gemaras seem to have different rules than what the Gemara said here in Maseches Kedushin. So the only rule that we extracted from Maseches Kedushin is that just because in one area they're doing something, that doesn't really mean anything. We're not going to consider that to be insignificant in halacha. So now we have to learn a totally different sugya. Those were with us a couple of years ago. We learned the sugya in Maseches Shabbos, but this was not the squeezing of the fruits. But this goes back. This was towards the beginning of the halacha. So considering the fact that we finished Maseches Shabbos last year, and we have been doing it for about 3 years, so this was somewhere in the 3 to 4 year category when we did this. So I think I should remember even the name of the sugya, but it's been a while ago, so I think we're all due for a little bit of chazar. So comes the Gemara in the second break of Maseches Shabbos. We take a little bit of a break from Kedusha for a minute, and the Gemara addresses a Malach on Shabbos, the sign, we learned it in Braisa. Sochetid befgoin of appreciation of Uzrudin. One is permitted to squeeze certain kinds of fruits on Shabbos, even Lechatchila. Now the starting point, why aren't you allowed to squeeze fruits on Shabbos? What's the issue? So it's an issue with the Gemara calls of Mefarek. And Mefarek, we assume, is part of the Malacha of Dash. Dash means that when I thresh something, when I exert pressure on the grain to extract the edible part of the grain and to push aside the outer part, which is not edible, so that's the Malacha of Dash. So either I can have my animals do Dash, or machinery do Dash, but I'm putting pressure onto the grain, pulling out the good part. So the Gemara tells us that what's the difference whether you're exerting pressure on the grain to get out the good part or you're exerting pressure on a fruit to get out the good part, able to get out the drink, to get out the juice. That's also a potential malach derais of dash. So the Braisa tells us that the malach of dash doesn't apply to all fruit. And there are certain fruit that it's muta even the chetchila to squeeze. And these are the pagoim and the prisha and the uzradin. What in the world are these? We're not quite sure what they are. But the one thing that we do know is that the reason why it's muta to squeeze them is because it's very, very abnormal to squeeze these kinds of fruit. These are things that nobody would really squeeze, Bezman Chazal, and therefore it's perfectly permissible to squeeze them. Why exactly is that? Just because something is abnormal usually doesn't make it mutl lechatchila. So we learned Maseches Shabbos, we had to talk about that a lot. as to why does that translate from not being a deraisa to being mamish but lechetchil. But whatever it is, it's clear in the Gemara that these are certain fruits that are permitted to squeeze because they're not normal to squeeze. The post can point out that these rules are going to change from time to place. Not the rules themselves, but the application of the rules. You may have a certain kind of fruit that was not normal to squeeze bizman chazal, but now has become very, very normal to squeeze. So, for example, the Pagoim Parishin of Uzradin. Rashi on the spot writes that one, I forgot which one, but one of these three fruits, Rashi writes what we call in Laz, in ancient French, what we call prunes. Rashi writes, Pei, Reish, Vav, Nun, Zayin, prunes. So Rashi says, prunes, I'm a sugar, or whatever, in a million years, squeeze a prune. And therefore, you decide, guy decides, Shabbos, well, he's got to squeeze a prune. So that's perfectly okay, lechetchila. I don't think anybody would say that. You go to the store today, you see there's a billion-dollar industry called prune juice. So clearly something has changed. So therefore, the het that is squeezed prunes wouldn't apply to Bizman Hazeh. So it's in this light, Steve's correct, quoting from the post-Kim in Shulchan Aruch, who discussed the squeezing of lemons. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes that mutter l'schot lemons. It's mutter to squeeze lemons, because nobody, I'm a sugar, whoever drinks the lemon juice, lemon juice is crazy, I'm almost crazy. Who would ever think of squeezing a lemon, and therefore, squeezing a lemon is mutter l'chatchila. So the Chayodam writes that, forget about what the Shulchan Aruch thought, Chayodam writes, in our day, it's very normal to squeeze lemon. He says, we have lemonades, we have punch, we have drinks, squeeze lemons all the time.
Right?
He gives you, yeah, tells you how to do it. Yeah, that's right. I'm sure, remember, okay, Mr. Brook quotes the Chayodim, gives you a recipe how to make lemonade. I know, I guess in Danzig, where the Chayodim had, they had the little lemonade stands also on the hot days. So he tells you, you squeeze the lemons, and you put some sugar into them, and you put a little water into them. He gives you a regular recipe for lemonade. So the Chayodim writes, how can anyone be mad at squeezing lemons, Bizman Hazeh? That's a joke. He said, Bizman Hazeh, it's normal to squeeze. Again, so these are going to change a little bit according to the time and place. But the Braisa says, although it's permissible to squeeze these kinds of prunes, fruits, of a lobbery moinim, but you're not allowed to squeeze rimonim. You're not allowed to squeeze pomegranates. V'shabes benashim b'menachem ha'yosoch to b'rimonim. That in the house of Beis Benashim b'menachem, during the week, they had a pomegranate juice business. They used to squeeze pomegranates. So therefore, presumably because they used to squeeze the pomegranates, we're not allowed to squeeze the pomegranates. So Amar Rav Nachman, halacha shabes b'nashim b'menachem. Rav Nachman said, we paskin like those pomegranate workers who used to squeeze the pomegranate juice. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Rav Nachman, it's a very strange way to formulate it by saying, we paskin like Entimans, we paskin like Heinz. He says, Menashim b'menachem tanu. He was a nice guy, Menashim b'menachem. He wasn't a tanu. He wasn't expressing a halachic opinion. He was just running a pomegranate juice business. So v'chitemi, what you must have meant is, halacha ki haitana desav halacha shem Menashim b'menachem. It must be that the reason why you're saying it's usur to squeeze pomegranates, you're following the view in Tanoim that you're not allowed to squeeze pomegranates, is because in the house of Menashim b'menachem, it was normal to squeeze pomegranates. So he asks the Gemara, Mishum the Savik Menashim b'menachem l'chamoso. There's one Tana who looked at the Menashim b'menachem people and said, oh, there's a guy squeezing pomegranates, we're not allowed to squeeze pomegranates. He asks the Gemara, Menashim b'menachem have a Rubid the Alma. They're the rover of the people. There's one guy, there's one family, they got a thriving pomegranate juice business, but nobody else considers it to be normal to squeeze pomegranates, and therefore, we have to follow them, so we can already begin to see how the sugya is about to become related to Maseches Kedushin. The Gemara is discussing, although in a very, very different area of halacha, here we're learning Shabbos, and before we're learning Kedushin, but the underlying premise is now becoming very similar, namely, who determines normalcy? Who determines what the regular standards are? So, in this discussion, in Maseches Shabbos, the Gemara was jumping and saying, why? You're going to follow Menashe b'Menachem? Nah, that can't make any sense. Why should the fact that some crazy people do this, why should that impact us? So the Gemara says, in? The Gemara says, yes, we do follow Menashe b'Menachem. And we're going to show you another area of halacha where we do take into consideration what a small minority of people are doing. So now we're jumping from one area of halacha to another. But again, the underlying premise is the same theme. Who determines the normal standards? So the Gemara says, yes, we do have to be concerned with Tzchitas Rimonim on Shabbos because of the following. This not, because we learned in a Mishnah, Hamakayim Kotze B'Kerem. The Mishnah now is discussing an issue of Kilei HaKerem. No one is not permitted to plant. If you have a vineyard and then you put other vegetables or other grains in the vineyard, so that's a potential malacha deraisa. The only thing is, it's only considered to be a violation of kilayim if the items that you're planting are normal to plant. If a guy is growing something that nobody in a million years would ever grow, that's not called zuriyas kilayim. So the Tanaim had a machloek is, what if a person plants thorns in a carob? Usually we try to take the thorns out of things that are growing. But here the guy specifically plants thorns right next to his grapes in the vineyard. So Rabbi Eliezer says that would be a violation of kilei hakerem, and therefore the resulting grapes and thorns would become usur. Because kilei hakerem is not only prohibited to plant, if one plants it, it becomes usur b'hanah. So any resulting of kilei hakerem is a problem. Most kilayims, if you violate, do not become usur. Let's say if a person grafts trees, so the resulting fruit is not prohibited. We eat it all the time. We eat a lot of things that are grafted. You're not allowed to do it. We weren't supposed to do it, but after the fact, it's permissible to eat it. But kilei hakerem is the one thing the Torah singles out and says, "Pentikdash it's asar ba'achilu ba'anam min haTorah." So Rabbi Eliezer said that planting thorns in a vineyard is regular kilayim. Racham say no, that the only time kilei hakerem applies is only if you plant something that's normal. And apparently, the thorns weren't that normal. Most normal people don't plant thorns. So what did Rabbi Eliezer respond? Rabbi Eliezer also agreed that you have to have something that's normal to plant in order for it to be kilei hakerem. So why did Rabbi Eliezer think it's normal to plant thorns? I'm Rabbi Chanina, my time with Rabbi Eliezer, she came by Aravia, Mekaimin, Kotze, Sadas, Ligmalehem. Because in Arabia, it was considered to be normal to plant thorns. Why am I high in Arabia they were planting thorns? Because in Arabia they had a lot of camels. And apparently the camels, they would feed them to, I don't know too much about the camels, I don't know too much about Arabia, I have to check with some people who spent some time in Saudi Arabia this week, but we'll just take what the Gemara says, that in Arabia they used to feed the camels thorns, and therefore, Eliezer said, it was normal, and therefore it's considered to be kilei hakerem. So why is this important for us? Because you see, at least from this stage of the Gemara about Rabbi Eliezer, that things that are done, even in a small area of the world, Arabia, Saudi Arabia is a big place, but it's not the roof of the world. Hashem, it's not the robe of the world. So comes Rabbi Chanina and says, it doesn't matter that it's the robe of the world. It's a place. It's things that people do. And therefore, if it's normal for some people, it becomes standard for everybody else as well. So now the Gemara is saying, just as Rabbi Eliezer treated Kitzim as Kelayim Bekerem because it was normal in a small place, so too, we should treat squeezing pomegranates as being normal because it's normal for some people. It's normal in the small area of the base Nashim and Menachem. So that was the equation of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, no, that equation is not correct. Media area. The Aravia Asra, Hachabat L'dayt Eitzel Kol Adam. The Gemara says that not all areas, not all minorities are created equal. That if you're dealing with a land, a place, a location, a geographical location called Aravia. Aravia is a big place. It's an area, it's a country. So if it's normal to do something there, that's going to impact on the entire world. Whereas the base Menashe B'Menachem, there was no state called base Menashe B'Menachem. There was no country called base Menashe B'Menachem. It was one guy. There was one guy living in the middle of the middle of Haifa. Who used to squeeze pomegranates. So what does that have to do with me? So comes the Gemara and says the basic rule is as follows. If you want to know. Does the halacha take into consideration individual practices to determine what the norm is? So the answer to that question is, like many other answers, it depends. It depends just how large a group of people are doing it. If it's one or two people doing it as individuals, they're bot l'daita. We just ignore them, and it doesn't impact on the halacha. And just because in some individuals were squeezing pomegranates, that doesn't talk to me. It doesn't impact me. But if the people who are doing it are in a whole area, they're a whole land, they're a whole country, so then that is considered to be normal. That's going to impact potentially on the entire world. That's exactly what Rabbi Eliezer said. So
do
now,
pomegranates affect us?
No. But there are only one guy. In the end, the Gemara questioned the Pesach of the pomegranate. The Gemara says we shouldn't ask the pomegranate. In the end, we do. But at this stage, the Gemara is saying we shouldn't really ask the pomegranates. So when all the dust settles, the answer to our question, the underlying question is, who determines standards? So the answer is, individuals don't, but locations, geographic locations do. So it's based on this Gemara that the Rishonim now bother with a big problem. The Rishonim say, let's go back to Maseches Kedushin. The Gemara was talking about whether Charufa is normal or not. Is that an acceptable standard for a Lashon of Kedushin? So the Gemara first quoted a Braisa that says, yes, it is. You know why? Because since in Eretz Yehuda they say it, so that's standard. That becomes standardized for the entire world. And the Gemara says, what? Yehuda, Viruba, the Alba? Yehuda is the majority of the world. Who are Yanshe Yehuda? Why should their Losh and why should their dictionary impact upon us? So then the Gemara had to revamp the Brice and come up with another reason why Charufa may be good. So you see clear from the Gemara in Maseches Kedushin that notwithstanding the fact that Eretz Yehuda they're doing something, that doesn't matter to us. Yehuda, Yehuda, Viruba, the Alma, that question stands on its own 2 feet. Yehuda is not a majority. So come to Rishon and ask, but wait a second, Yehuda is not one guy, is that one person called Yehuda? Yehuda means Eretz Yehuda. Judea, half Eretz Yisrael is Yehuda. This entire geographic location called Eretz Yehuda is using the word Charufa. They consider that to be normal. So that should be the halakha equivalent of the thorns in Arabia. So who would have ever thought, if I would have told you a Zach equation, that a Lashon Charufa in Yehuda is the halakha equivalent of thorns in Saudi Arabia? That's exactly what the Gemara just said. That the same way that the thorns in Arabia are considered to be normal, because it's a whole land, not just a few individuals, so too the Lashon Charufa should be normal based on the fact that it's normal in Eretz Yehuda. So that's the kasha that the Rishonim ask. So come, some of the Rishonim, and the reason why I have to apologize it wasn't printed out, is because the two Rishonim who speak most about this topic, we did when we were singing Yeshiva, are two Rishonim who apparently are not on the Bar Ilan. One is the Talmud HaRashba, printed in the Kovetz of Maseches Kedusha, one of the Tamidim of the Rashba, and the other is the Shita L'Nei de L'Mi. So if you expect me to tell you who wrote it, I can't tell you. It was an ancient manuscript back from the days of the Rishonim that we don't know who wrote. Great parish of Maseches Kedusha, but it's called the Shita L'Nei de L'Mi. So both of those Svarim are printed in the Kovetz in Maseches Kedusha. That's why I assigned them to the Marmar Kamos for the Bachum and Yeshiva, because they all have Kovetz in. But when I handed over the Marmar Kamos to be printed out, I guess I didn't realize that apparently neither of them appear in the Bar Ilan. So we'll have to say this part of the Shia a little bit about that. So both the Talmud HaRashba and the Shita L'Nei L'Mi are bottom of this kasha. How come the Gemara in Maseches Kedusha is rejecting the Anshei Yehuda? After all, they're a land. So comes the Talmud HaRashba and says, we have to go back to the Sugya Maseches Shabbos, back to the issue about Kotz and Bikilayim, and come to the realization that it's a machlekes atanoim. Let's go back for a moment, back to this, to the second of the Ramakamos, 3 lines of the Mamdus Nan. Hamakayim Kotz Bikerim, Mabeleza Mekidish, Chavram, Eina Makadish. The Chavram said it's not true. The Chavram said that it's not Kilayim. Why did the Chacham disagree with Rabbi Eliezer? So it's unclear from the Gemara. We know exactly why Rabbi Eliezer said what he said. He's quoting the people in Arabia, the camels in Arabia, but the Chacham are disagreeing. So comes the Talmud HaRashba and says, we can understand the Chacham Sheet in one of two ways. Either we can understand that there's almost a machlekes in Metzius here, or there's a real machlekes in Halacha. Perhaps the machlekes in Metzius is, the Chacham says, we don't know what's going on in Arabia. We have no way of knowing. We don't. You telling us you heard it in Arabia, somebody told you that there are camels in Arabia eating thorns. Christ, we have no idea if that's true. So the Chacham and Rabbi Eliezer were arguing about something that's a pure Metzius question. If the facts were right, that Imtum Tzalema, we would know what's really going on in Arabia, and people were growing thorns to feed the camels, if that would be true, then the Chacham would agree halachically to Rabbi Eliezer. Why are they disagreeing with Rabbi Eliezer? Because they're not sure what the facts are. Now, even though we don't like to usually have machlokes and metzias, but that's a metzias where it's easy to be mevarer. If you can ascertain the facts right away, what are you pimpling about a machlokes? Just go and do a test and see what the facts are. It's not so easy to do this. The Chacham and Rabbi Eliezer are sitting around in Eretz Yisrael, and in Eretz Yisrael, nobody's growing thorns. In Babel, nobody's growing thorns. In Egypt, nobody. Never is such a crazy thing to grow thorns. Rabbi Eliezer is telling us, in Arabia, they grow thorns. The Chacham say, Arabia is 1,000 miles away from that. I'm going to figure out what's going on in Arabia. I don't know what's going on in Arabia. So therefore, the Machlekes, Rabbi Eliezer, the Chachamim, was not a halachic issue. It was a Metzias issue. Well, maybe, no, that's not the Pshat. It's not a Machlekes and Metzias. Everyone knew exactly what was going on in Arabia. The Chachamim turned around to Rabbi Eliezer and said, we know what's going on in Arabia, and so what? Okay, it doesn't interest us what's going on in Arabia. Because the Chachamim say, just because something is normal in one place, doesn't impact us, notwithstanding the fact that it's a country. If that's the pshat of the Chachamim, that the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer are having a machlokes now in determining how do you determine standards and norms, that Rabbi Eliezer says you follow geographic locations, and the Chachamim say you follow Rov HaOlam, If that's the pshat of the machlokes, says the Talmud Rashba, then the Gemara in Kedushin reads like a charm. The Gemara in Kedushin jumps and says, "What are you telling me about Eretz Yehuda? Yehuda Avirub Li Alma?" So the answer is right. That's a good question. Know why that's a good question? Because that's the Chacham speaking. Because we don't follow Rabbi Eliezer. We don't follow Rabbi Eliezer in Kelayim. We don't follow Rabbi Eliezer in Kedushin either. So according to the Talmud Rashba, there is a machlokes between the Sugya and Shabbos and the Sugya and Kedushin. Don't try to patch up. Don't try to resolve the Sugya. It's a machlokes. It is the machlokes. That's what that appears in the Mishnah. Maseches Kelayim. How do you determine standards? So everybody agrees that if it's a yachid doing something, that's batal. We ignore that. The machlokes at Tanoim is, what if it's not a yachid? What if it's already a whole tzibur? It's a whole eretz. It's a whole land. What would that halacha say? So that's the first attempt at the Talmud Rashi, but to always patch up our sugya, that our sugya is taka machlokes, but it's a well-established machlokes. That is the machlokes Rebbe Lezer and the Chachamim. But then the Talmud Rashba says, you know, we're not so sure that we just explained the machlokes Tanoim properly. Maybe the machlokes really was a mitzias. Maybe Rabbi Eliezer and the Chum agree that if you have a land, so whatever the land does, that impacts it everybody else. So how come the Gemara jumped on the Anshei Yehuda? How come the Gemara said, v'chiru l'huda v'ru b'liyama? So comes the Talmud Rashba and says, who says that Yehuda is a land? Yehuda is a very, very tricky thing. Who says Yehuda is a country, is a whole entity? The Mishnah tells us that Eretz Yisrael was divided into three different areas. There was Yehuda, there was Galil, and there was Eivre Yarden. There were times, politically, where different parts of Eretz Yisrael belonged to different kingdoms. There was a whole time, after the time of Alexander the Great, Eretz Yisrael was divided up between the northern kings from the Syrian Greeks and the Ptolemies from Egypt. So there were different parts of Eretz Yisrael, and Eivre Yarden was legitimately a different part of Eretz Yisrael. But the fact that we label it as Eretz Yehuda, that's a political entity, that's a whole area, that's a geographic entity, I'm not really sure. So it comes to Talmud Rashba and says, Arabia, you ever been to Arabia? That's a big place, that's a whole kingdom, that's a whole entity. So that type of a place called Arabia, that impacts in the entire world. The Eretz Yehuda, a small portion of Eretz Israel, so you have a little bit of areas called area around Yerushalayim, a little bit of Beit Shemesh, a little Beit Meir, you have a small Eretz Yehuda, it's not so big. So maybe Eretz Yehuda is not enough to impact on everybody else. So according to the second Teretz in the Talmud Rashba, that yes, it's true, Imtim Zalomi, we'd have an entire area that would impact on the Lashon of Kedushin, but Yehuda doesn't quite make the mark. So the Talmud Rashba is searching, trying to see what some of the differences are. So we haven't yet seen any real lumdish differences between them. According to the first answer of the Talmud Rashba, there's no difference. It's the same issue, just machlokes Tanoim. According to the second answer, it's not so much of a lumdish answer, is that the two sugyas are really the same. It's just that the numbers are a little bit more in Arabia than they are in Eretz Yehuda. Hopefully, we'll see next week. So we'll try to see that where the Talmud Rashba is now going to develop. That no, there are very real differences up in din. This is not just the mitzias. There's a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller, but the areas of halacha are different. The practices are different. The standards and norms are different, and there's going to be some serious impacts and differences in halacha. So hopefully as the sugya develops a little bit next week, we're going to see that this is not really a kedushin sugya. This is a kedushin sugya that impacts on many, many areas of halacha. How do you determine what's considered to be normal? Okay, stop here.